Welcome to this week's podcast of Live Transformed. So glad you're taking the time and making the investment for your heart and for your life. And I am thrilled at the journey that you're taking and really the series that we've been going through here. And just the transformation is really real.
Yeah.
You know, if I could just simply say that, it's really worth it. I'm so thankful that, you know, I get to live different. And I see life different. I experience life different. And it's it really is that place of exchange of my life for his, my ways for his. I want to see things the way he does.
You know what? And Bob, I'm really sorry, Jim, but I'm really thankful for you. I'm really thankful for both of you. And Jim, you have you really will have no way of knowing how much you've influenced Bob and I on a daily basis. How we help people is because we've learned about heart physics. We've learned how to all the importance and the significance of going to our heart zone and understanding doing heart exercises and all anything to connect with God. It's all about connecting with God. But our entire perspective has changed because of this.
Well, you know, there are thousands of people, probably tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands, when you consider what I'm doing all over the world. There are thousands and thousands of people that repeat what I teach. And they'll refer to me as being their mentor and their teacher and all that kind of stuff. But really, all they really do is repeat what I say. There are very, very few people in those thousands and thousands of people that reteach. And I'm fine with people reteaching. I'm fine. That's why I put it out there, you know. But there are very few people that actually make it theirs in their life and develop themselves first before they start trying to teach this. And, you know, one of the reasons you and Bob are so effective are using this so effectively, whereas many people are just preaching it and talking about it and repeating it, is because you have made it a way of life. Just like I did as I came into it, I made it a way of life, not just a talking point or a place to get great sermons, you know. And so, you know, I appreciate so much the fact that you guys make this real in your lives and you multiply it to other people. Oh, by the way, let me just throw this out. This is way cool. You know, for years I've been knowing that we were going to expand what we do in prisons.
Yeah.
And it's looking like I'm going to be having a meeting today, and it's looking like there's a possibility that we will be going into hundreds of prisons all over America, maybe sometime in the next 30 days. But also,
wow, that's huge.
Just a few days ago, we, Impact Ministries, was invited to provide programming, school of ministry, materials to be translated in Pakistan. And so we're probably going to be influencing really literally. And when I say literally, I don't mean sort of like kind of. I'm talking about literally millions of people in Pakistan.
Wow.
And so, you know, all these doors are opening up. But here's the thing. These doors don't really open because I pursue them and because I've really gone out and chased it down. They open because people get their lives influenced. Every one of these doors that open like this is are people who have had their lives influenced and who are making this journey for themselves. So, man, I'm just so excited. And I tell people all the time, you know, if it weren't for guys like if it weren't for you, Jimmy Bratcher, Ed Elliott, you know, all of these guys, you know, Brett Roberts, Clint Byers, I mean, I could just go down the list, like Dennis and Denise Capra. And I even hate to start making a list because I'll leave out, you know, key people. But the point is, everything I do would just be information in a computer if it wasn't for those of you who multiply this and who take this into people's lives. And what's interesting, what I really love is when people not just make it their own, but they make it own and bring a dimension to it that I never would have thought about. Or I never would have seen, you know, from my vantage point in life. So anyhow, man, I'm like all kinds of grateful today, all kinds of jacked up and excited about what's going on.
That's great. And when we make it your own, what you just said, I'm thinking of you, listener, because you're hearing this and you are taking this in and you are making it yours. Like everything you just heard, just go, that's me. you know what? For me today, I'm going to make a decision that what we talk about in today's podcast, yep. I'm going to make it mine because I will have an expression and a representation of this message that will be personal and unique that only I could bring to the, only the people I influence. Like, this is really huge. If you get, yeah. if you really capture the significance of who you are with the message of the heart and how much you affect people yeah. around you. So I'm really glad you're listening today because, you know, talking today is going to be important Absolutely. For that.
Yeah. Go ahead,
you know, Jim. You know, one of the things that's really interesting, truth is always multidimensional. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've said this for almost 50 years, is that truth is absolute, but the application of truth is always variable.
Right, right.
And people have trouble with that. You know, they think that, no, if truth is absolute, then there's only one way to apply it. Mm-hmm. No. We all have different backgrounds. We're all in different environments. We're all facing different challenges.
And we all have different personalities and you know, yeah. like expressions.
And so the process whereby we're going to apply truth is always going to reach the same destination. Yes. of manifesting the character and nature of God. But how we reach that destination, it's always going to be a biblical path, but still it's going to be somewhat tailor-made, you know, for our own lives. And, you know, this is one of the things that religion is like is like socialism. Mm-hmm. No, we don't want you to be creative. We don't want you to be individual. We want you to think about it the way we think about it. We want you to right. interpret it the way we interpret it, but we want you also to apply it the way that we apply it.
I'm really hearing you because truth is, like, I'm just putting this out there. I'm not saying this is right, but I'm just going to put it out there. It's almost like truth is holy, but our application is more like a method. It's more like it can't be, like when I say holy, I mean unchangeable, set apart. And it's like so many people think their methods or their application is holy. So have to do the method and the application the way I do it because this is what works for me. And so everyone should be doing this like me. And I think that's where we get in trouble because methods are literally not holy. They're just a method. They're like having different kinds of cars. They're different vehicles, different ways to make this work for me. You know, we all have different preferences and attractions to what kind of cars we like, you know, and it's the same way with application.
You know, the first model, and a lot of people wonder why I talk about socialism so much, and it's because it is the only lie powerful enough to destroy the entire world. It is the lie to which Christians are most vulnerable. It's amazing how many Christians have accepted socialist concepts and think that they're godly concepts. But, you know, Nimrod and the Tower of Babel is one of the first types of socialism in the Bible. Because, see, God said that when you build an altar of any kind, you build it out of rocks or stones. You never build it out of man-made bricks. And so God, it kind of gets into this in other places, but God is all into the fact that you are all individuals.
Because bricks are man-made. They're all completely perfectly shaped. Yeah,
they're shaped by man, and they all look just alike.
And Jesus even calls us, he doesn't call us living bricks.
That's right.
He calls us living stones.
So anyhow, this is incredibly important because, you know, this sounds, I don't mean for this to sound mean, but, you know, almost like I got so much value out of the Word of Faith movement. And people probably think I didn't because I challenged so many of the things in the Word of Faith, in the Word of Faith movement. But, you know, what was interesting, the Word of Faith movement, I don't think they ever meant to, but at the end of the day, you ended up trusting a formula.
Right.
And so everything between you and God, faith was about believing that if you would work the system, that it would work.
Yes, yeah. Like the formula became the holy thing.
Yeah. And so we you know, one of the things I liked about the Baptist, and I'll tell you, I will never forget this. I'll tell you, when I started going to the first church I went to, a little Baptist church, And I tell you, it was safer. Doctrinally, it was much safer than a charismatic or word of faith church. Right. Because they didn't have a bunch of crazy doctrines, you know?
Right.
Now, they left a lot of stuff out.
Yeah.
And you know, but I would rather leave stuff out and let the individual sort it out.
Yes.
Than to have all this stuff that is just so off the rails and you're trying to sort out, you know, goofiness instead of just saying, well, okay, you know, I'm going to go here. But one of the statements that I'm telling you I heard every single week in a Baptist service was making Jesus your personal Lord and Savior.
Yes.
And the emphasis was on personal. The emphasis was on individual. Mm-hmm. And even though they really didn't have, you know, a lot of understanding, they didn't have any understanding about developing the heart, they understood that this was supposed to be an individual relationship where you learn the Word of God. Now, they would use the word heart, but they would talk about, you know, get the Word in your heart and then just walk with God however he's leading you.
And I find that even with couples that we don't know that we do this, but I see it all the time with couples, is that they put an unspoken hope and expectation that you will have the same methods as me when it comes to God in our relationship. Bob and I's relationship completely got to new levels of freedom and almost just authenticity when we really gave each other the fact that we are very different in our expression of our methods of how we even experience Jesus and stuff. Like, but people put it on their spouse and their kids and the people they love that you really should be doing this like me. And that is so mean and hateful to put that on somebody because it just forces something that is nothing to do with love, you know? Anyway,
there's a lot of questions people ask me that I just won't answer.
Yeah, I bet they do.
Because it's going to be like, You're gonna have to figure out what that looks like in your life. Mm. I know what it looks like in my life, but the Bible doesn't define that, so you got to figure this out. So, in couples, you know, one of the interesting things I don't know if we talked about on here or somewhere I spoke recently. You know, I was talking about this. It's amazing how many people think they have the same values. And usually they define, this happens with couples, they define the value by the end result. In other words, this is the end result that I want. So how many times have you sat down with couples and man, they think, man, when they get married, and by the way, this was why 50% of the people that came to me for marriage counseling ended up not getting married, was because I actually got them to talk about things that they thought they had talked about, but they never had.
Right.
But how many times do you have a couple sitting there where they both have the same values about how they want their kids to be honest, they want to have kids to walk with God, but maybe, let's say one of the parents is a real controller, an army drill sergeant type, and so they're trying to get them there through this process, and the other person is too lenient, and they're trying to get them there through that process. So the real truth is, they have the same value.
They
as
have
far
the same
outcome.
Goal, same end games. They want the same thing. Mm-hmm.
But they are not in agreement about the process.
Right.
Because they think their process is the process.
We kind of like say that they have the same goal, but they have a different path to get there. And their path looks completely different from each other.
So, you know, in our walk with God, by the way, I don't know if you know this, but you know, there's so many fake movements that are coming up now. I'm telling you, it is crazy, the crazy doctrinal things that are happening. You know, there's a church, I'm not going to say what city it was in, but at one time, just probably not 15 years ago, it was the fastest growing evangelical church in America. And so the guy was a hardcore faith preacher that really... I'm not saying he was an immoral man or anything, but I'm saying by and large, he didn't live what he preached. And you know, I hate to say it, most faith preachers I ever knew didn't live what they preached. Mm. They didn't really walk by faith. They didn't make God this. You know, they always had plans and they worked hard and they had personal goals. And so while they were working their plans, you know, they were breathing prayer saying, God, lead me, I'm trusting you. But the real truth is, no, they were working their plan. Mm. And so, you know, it sounds good when you preach it, but when you're living it, you go, wait a minute, this is not what you were talking about. But anyhow, so, one of my dogs didn't like that. You can tell the difference in their bark if they're giving you like an amen or an oh man. So anyhow, so this guy eventually, then he swayed over. One of the things that I have seen for decades now with a lot of people that were extremists in the Word of Faith movement, eventually they get to the place where they say, this ain't working. And so then they morph usually in an overreaction into something else. And so he morphed over into all of a sudden, next thing you know, he's wearing a priest collar and you know, trying to turn a tin building into high church. And so then, you know, that kind of don't really fly and doesn't really produce anything. So eventually then he turns church over to somebody else. So the next guy that comes in on the church, the next guy that comes in starts teaching this thing about how that God made a covenant with Israel as a nation. Therefore, none of you have a personal relationship with God. Your salvation is not personal. It's about what happens in the group. And I'm thinking, read a Bible every now and then. But my point is this, and we started this whole conversation by saying we are built together as living stones,
yes,
like Bob pointed
exactly.
out, into a temple that where the praise of God abides and should rise forth. But that can't happen if you are imitating somebody else.
Right.
So we want to take people on a incredibly authentic journey,
mm-hmm,
that's Bible based. That we can look at the Bible and we can tell when we got off track. It's not hard to tell when we got off track. I'm telling you, more and more. And I know this sounds so mean. I'm just telling you more and more. I just wanted to say to people. Like, have you ever read the Bible for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You're griping, you're complaining about what's not working. Well, what you're telling me you're trying to do is not in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people say, well, you make it too complicated. Really? So you dream up something that's not in the Bible, try to make it work, try to ask God to bless it, try to get God to come over here in this cesspool that you live in and bless this cesspool, but you don't want to go over there and swim in the clean waters. You know, you don't want to go over there and swim in the pristine waters. So all that to say, this is part of that paradox of I have a model. I can look at the journey that the children of Israel made. I can look at the names of God. I can look at the life and teachings and ministry of Jesus. I can look at the death, burial, and resurrection. I mean, to be confused, but the only thing you can do to really get confused is go to church, and that'll get you confused.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to lift all this stuff out of context and make it about your church participation. I'm not trying to be too mean. I love church. I love church. I love good churches. And I know a lot of great pastors. I know a lot of great churches. But most of the time, people's confusion starts when they go to church. So on the one hand, we got this incredibly clear-cut path. Go from Egypt to Canaan. Bam.
Yeah.
And here's the challenges you're going to face. Here's the things you need to be incorporating into your life to keep your heart alive and fresh to God. And so you're looking at a nation and you're realizing we're the church, we're the body, and together we're making this journey. But then you flip over another side and say, but within that is a totally individual, personal relationship with God. So we're having to look at truth and say, okay, here is the absolute truth. But then we start looking at the individuals that walked with God and that succeeded with God. And they were all different. And they all walked somewhat of a different path. They didn't depart from the Word. They didn't depart from godliness. They didn't depart from, from righteousness. But the way they walked all of that out in their personal lives was completely different.
And I just came in there. I think that when I remember where I was sitting, and I knew Jesus my whole life, but I remember in my late 20s where I was sitting and someone said, have you ever realized that within the Word, we throw out the word personal relationship Jesus. We learn how to witness through my childhood. Just tell them they need to have a personal relationship. We use this personal word. And then I was in this moment when someone said, have you ever thought that the word person is in the word personal, because Jesus is a person. And I can't emphasize that more, that we somehow make it not that he's not a person. And I maybe this isn't very lights on amazing for anyone listening, but it sure was
should,
for me.
It should be.
It should be, because what happened is that he's invisible, but he's a person. And we don't catch it that he's right here with us. He's right here always, like a person. He's 100% person and 100% God. And that's why it's so personal. My relationship with Bob looks different than the one with my kids. And like, personal means you have a chemistry between two people that's going to look different.
Well, with every person comes a personality.
Right.
That's right. Oh, that's good, Bob.
And so, you know, even with the three of us here, you know, Jim and I have a relationship. Audrey and Jim have a relationship. Together we have a relationship.
The three of us have a relationship.
And it's the dynamics of that personality that makes the experience really quite unique.
Exactly.
And so why wouldn't you then have a personal relationship with God?
And let's even say this.
You know, that would be reflective of your very own personality.
Yeah.
And a personal chemistry. Like, you, me and Jesus looks different than Jim and Jesus or Bob and Jesus.
That's what I just said, Dave.
I know, and I'm catching it. Okay. I was like, oh my gosh. We talk about chemistry all the time because there's different ingredients make different explosions. And yeah, so that's really good.
No, that's actually.
You're inspiring me, Bob.
All right, that's good.
I'll tell you something really interesting. And people can just need to, they don't need to condemn themselves with this. But, you know, one of the ways that you might be able to kind of say, okay, I want to look in the mirror. You know, and the mirror that you always look in is the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
More than once, the Bible is referred to as a mirror that you, if you will look into it, you will get to see how do I see me in my relationship with God? Because as you're reading the word, you say, well, wait a minute, that's not alive in my heart. That's not what I do. The word has always got to be the basis. We just always got to remember the word is the basis, because this shows me who God is. And I've got all of these things in the word, kind of show me how to keep my heart protected. You know, we talked a little bit about this when we talked about the Urim and the Thummim and the breastplate and all that kind of stuff. But we also have to realize this. I can look around at my life and I can tell what's probably happening between me and God based on what's happening with me and the people around me.
Interesting.
Now this infuriates people. You know, I will have, and most people don't get it, and, you know, I know they're not going to get it, but, you know, sometimes, man, I can't even tell you how many times I'll get an email that says, man, no ministry, nobody's ever helped me the way you have helped me. You opened my eyes to God, but you said this the other day, and I just want you to know I am done with that, and you meant this, and this, da, da, da. And, you know, the two things I write them back and say is like, that's kind of interesting that somebody would have that kind of effect on your life, and you would just trash them immediately. I said, the second thing is you're making all kinds of judgments because you're assuming, you know, that you know why I said that. And as near as I can tell, you're misunderstanding why I said that. And I'll just say, you know what? It's fine that you're going to throw me away. I don't care. But here's something you might want to consider. I doubt that as mean and as hateful as you are, I doubt anybody would tell you the truth. But it'd be really interesting for you to find out if this is how you treat everybody in your world. Because if this is how you would treat the person that you say helped you more than anybody you've ever known, I can't imagine how you're treating the people around you.
Wow.
And people very seldom respond positively to that. But the ones that do.
No, but seriously, the truth that offends you the most could be the very thing that'll change everything for you.
The ones that actually go talk to people around them. And I've had a lot of people who might say something, say, you know what? You're right. You know, I talked to my wife and she told me that I do that to her all the time, that I don't listen to her. I pass judgments. I get, you know, and da, 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 da. But here's the thing you have to, you know, there's a principle set forth in 1 John. And 1 John says, if you can't love your brother who you can see, how can you love God who you can't see?
Wow.
And so you start realizing how I treat others. See, I can create this delusional, imaginary concept of who God is. Mm-hmm. And I can shape him, and this part is going to be real important for what I'm going to wrap this part of the segment up with, but I can shape God into my likeness and image. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so really, I create an image of God that is like me, and that's the way I can feel like I have acceptance and love and approval from God. So if I'm judgmental, I'm going to create a judgmental God. You know, if I'm critical and fault-finding, I'm going to create a critical and fault-finding God. So I'm always going to create a God that reflects me. And the only other option is to die to self and discover who God is and me transform into that image instead of trying to transform him into my image. But here's the kicker.
This is good stuff.
If you want to do the test, here's the test. Uh-huh. Do you have a tendency to have one kind of concept of what a friend is? In other words, are there certain things that you would say, if you're my friend, this is what you would do?
Yes, I do.
And so, the more strictly we create this narrow dimension of who can be our friend, then the one of the things that you can absolutely be sure of, and that is you will never let God be who he is in your life, and you will always try to shape him into what he needs to be your friend, instead of you allowing the Holy Spirit to shape you into who you need to be so you can be God's friend.
Stop it. Now you need to just stop, Jim. You need to just...
Did I go too far?
You just don't even know. Because last week, Bob's looking at me. Are you going to confess? Shame the devil, tell the truth.
What you're talking about, baby.
Just last week, we socially met with someone and I was offended. Oh, yeah. And I was offended. Okay, I'm just going to tell you. And I was hurt. I don't know if you say offended. It's hurt and offended the same thing.
True Confessions by Audrey.
Okay, so anyway, they didn't, I'm sure there wasn't their motive or intention, but it just touched my heart and it hurt my feelings what had happened. I felt judged or whatever. So then I told Bob on the way home in the car and we had quite a talk about it. You know, like it. Because I was whenever you react and have a button or trigger, my thing is, what's in me that was reactive? Because I want to get to the point where I can be with anybody, anytime, and I don't have buttons and triggers, right? Like that's me doing heart work that, you know, I can have opinions and stuff, but I don't want to emotionally react to these things. And so I emotionally reacted and it wasn't huge. But I let it be a lesson because I think whenever that happens, if you take it seriously, you can learn something. And by the end of the whole thing, I learned, I said, you know what, Bob, I guess it just comes down to the fact that I have a certain kind of people that if I'm going to hang out with them and they're going to be my friend, I want them to be like this. And I literally just said that last week. And now you're saying this. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Well, let me make sure that I don't put you or anybody else in a position to overly or critically judge themselves.
Okay.
You know, there are people that I enjoy hanging out with, having fun with.
Okay. Yeah.
That doesn't mean that's a person that I'm going to be involved in ministry with. That doesn't mean that's a person that I'm going to go into business with. So, you know, it's wise. Matter of fact, I love the NIV where it says it in Proverbs that the righteous, or I can't remember if it says the righteous or the wise, that they are cautious in friendships.
Okay.
And we should be cautious in friendships. But here's what so many people do is like, if you do not fit into this box, then you can't be my friend at all.
Okay, and I can't even love you or get along with you or have dinner with you or something.
Yeah, I can't. I can't. You know, and so that person, is so insecure that they are basically saying anything, everything that's going to come, that's going to touch my life in any way, I have to control it. I have to control who it is, what it looks like, how they talk. You know what? There are a lot. I was thinking today, there is a friend of mine that I really love and care about. I think this friend really loves and cares about me. But, you know, those of us who kind of come from the street like I did, and plus the type of people that I ministered to for so long, really kind of, I needed to have a certain type of sense of humor to be effective with those people. I had to have a certain way of communicating. So mm-hmm. I realized I have this old kind of street hippie, you know, sense of humor. And you know what? Some people that don't have that background get highly offended at my sense of humor.
Yes. And it's the very thing I love about you.
Well, and actually some people love. And so, you know, over the years, I'm just thinking like of this one person, but this, I could probably come up with a list of a long list of people that we cared about each other. We always wanted it to work, but really we tried to make the relationship be something that it wasn't. Hmm. And usually they would end up getting offended. Yeah. Offended at me. Mm-hmm. And I understand you got all of these dynamics in sure. friendships and in relationships. Sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm real comfortable with the fact that I know there's some people that I like to be in ministry with that are never really going to like my personality.
Right, sure.
You know, or my sense of humor. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that over here in this area we haven't mm-hmm. found something that's workable.
Yes.
But the tendency, the gross tendency is for people to say, if a person doesn't check all of these boxes, mm-hmm. they can't be my friend. And I think that person gets ripped off in relationships because, man, mm-hmm. I got all kinds of friends. Yeah. I got friends that really all I like to do is have fun with them. Mm-hmm. They're just people that make me laugh. You know, we have a good time together. I've got people that all I want to do is do business with them. You mm-hmm. know? I've got friends of all different kinds because I didn't block them out because I couldn't check every box on them.
I love this because I think it's good in your because we want to always be wise with our time and our investment. Our attention is our resource, and I think knowing what certain friends are in your life, I think just sort of having that kind of clear thing is really helpful. Because just I think that what I was the result of what happened the other night with me was, I really enjoyed this, but I don't think it would ever be in my inner circle because,
and that's fine.
Yeah, and that's okay. You know, it doesn't mean that, like, this all started when we were talking about how God is and, like, we shape God to be.
But you're not going to totally reject the person.
Oh, absolutely not. No. But I don't think I would start, you know, really developing more and more and more intimacy as far as a friendship goes.
Yeah.
So, but maybe, you know, I would. I mean, I don't know.
Here's one of the most interesting things. See, man, I can remember when my world lit up theologically when Jesus was talking about the Pharisees kind of letting them know that they were in sin, you know, and that, man, they got into an argument, about we're the children of Abraham and all this kind of stuff. And so Jesus basically said, and I think they asked, I can't remember for sure. I think they kind of said, are you saying we're in sin? Or something like that. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he said, the reason you can't see that you're in sin is because you insist that you see.
Mm.
And you talking about a life changing explosion. And this really got into a lot of what I wrote and how to stop the pain, all this kind of stuff. And that is that, whatever we insist that we see, whatever our perception is, becomes what we experience as a reality in this life. And so, if I decide something about you, and I decide that what I see about you is the way it is, and da 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 da, then that's what I'm going to notice about you. That's what I'm going to pick up when I'm around you.
Yeah.
That's going to become my judgments that's around you.
Yeah.
And so, I started on this journey of looking at the world around me and said, how much of how I'm interpreting things is just based on my perception. And I am not giving, I am not finding a way to facilitate discovering what reality is in all of these different relationships and friendships and even in my walk with God.
Mm-hmm. That is profound.
Because my perception is my own personal interpretation of the stimuli that I'm simply receiving.
Yep.
And so this is... For me, this is, and again, that can be your buttons, your triggers, or, you know, whatever's going on. But again, that's what's stimulating you. And now you're the one that attaches the significance, the value. Yep. You're the one that interprets what's going on. What you've created is your own perception.
So, you know, we were talking earlier, you know, about whenever, you know, whenever Paul... Man, you know, he had to jack up the church at Corinth. Man, they were so carnal. And I always find it just kind of really interesting that, you know, that they were all about the gifts, but they weren't all about character. Which I always, and so many times in 50 years of ministering, you know, with the Pentecostals, the Word of Faith, the Charismatic, you know, all these different groups of people, it's kind of interesting. I don't think people intend it to, but in all of those groups, you would find that most of them created an unspoken preference for character or gifts.
Interesting.
And it seemed like the groups that really went for character diminished the gifts and almost never participated in the gifts. But then it would seem like the people that really went for the gifts diminished character and felt like that having these gifts operate in their life were really an exemption from character.
And it's kind of like they started forming these camps and they started to get find like-minded people. It's like, we got to forget the gifts. They're too scary. Yeah. We need to, you know, really emphasize character. Yeah, I get it.
So the church at Corinth, man, they were, you know, they were very divisive. You know, they were in arguments about who baptized who, you know, it's sort of like who laid hands on me, whose
anointed.
I get, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, you know, Paul just tells them how stupid they were. And so Paul had to challenge some moral problems. This is another thing. And I you know, the fake grace movement, they do this. You know, the fake grace movement is really an elitist movement. You know, in the government, in the world, socialism is really a tool of the elitist. It's not because the elitists really believe in socialism. Socialism is just a deception that gets you to start going down a path to where you eventually give control of your life over to an elitist. Now, an elitist is a person who believes they are smarter than the average person, their opinion is more valuable than the average person, and of course, that's what it's all about. It's about the elitist few have the right view, and the rest of the world should just surrender to that opinion. And so, you know, In groups that really are all about the gifts, then the people who have the gifts, and for those of you that can't see this, I am air quoting, people who have the gifts, you know, then they're the elitist. Their view matters more than yours because they have the gifts operating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, somehow that gift makes them very important and very smart or very influential. Yeah.
One of the things that you will always notice anytime a person starts assuming that their insights make them kind of better than everybody else or makes their opinion, you know, more important than anybody else, one of the things that you always find is they will use that to create exemptions from godliness, always.
Mm.
And so in these groups with the gifts, that over the years, I have found that, and I have known preachers, and I could give you a list of names of people that I know behind the scenes that would scare you to death if I actually, I'm not going to, you know, list them out, but how many people, you know, were stealing money, massive amounts of money from their ministries, were committing immorality, all kinds of corrupt stuff. But they felt like because their gift was kind of working, that was evidence that God didn't have a problem with their sin. Well, see, that's kind of the way the fake grace movement is. The fake grace movement is an elitist movement based on a way of seeing yourself that really is delusional. And so, and I just got to tell you, the people that are into the over extreme corrupt concepts of grace, most of them that I know are struggling with ethics and morals and those kinds of things. I'm not saying everybody there is. That's not what I'm saying. But the point is this: you get a perception of God, you get a perception of yourself, you get a perception of people around you, and suddenly you create this reality based on this perception. So in Corinth, they thought they were everything because they had the gifts. And man, Paul's smacking them in the face because of immorality. And so, it was a pretty tough rebuke. But in 2 Corinthians, Paul writes them back. It's kind of interesting. A lot of people say, well, Paul wrote them back in 2 Corinthians saying, forget all that, I didn't really mean it. No, he didn't mean it. And actually, Paul goes in 2 Corinthians a lot into perception, a lot into how you see God, and how that how you see God can create a veil over your own eyes. But Paul says something to me that is so phenomenal in 2 Corinthians 2. He's writing to them, and in verse 10, he says, "Now whom you forgive of anything, I also." In other words, I'm going to forgive him as well. For if indeed I have forgiven anything, I have forgiven that person or that individual for your sakes in the presence of Christ, lest Satan should take advantage of us. Now, so Paul is talking about really not wanting to give Satan an opportunity to work in this situation. And so, you know, that forgiving somebody, by the way, does not mean we approve.
Or condone.
It does not mean we condone it. It does not mean we're going to let it go. You know, one of the things I talk about in my book, which, by the way, I hope everybody has gotten a free copy of it. By the way, we now have in the book in paper, so if you want to order that, now that will cost you some downloads free. And in just a few days, we're going to release the audio book.
Oh, great. And, wow. And so, that's amazing.
So we are wanting to get this out there. And everybody that gets it, send the download link page to everybody you know and tell them why
they need to listen to it. It's a free ebook, almost going to be available in paper and in audio coming soon. Okay.
Here's one of the great deceptions of socialism and ignorant Christians. And that is, Christians do not make a distinction between civil consequences and spiritual consequences. So, see, socialism sounds like it's preaching the gospel. Well, you know what? This person, you know, I know they killed somebody and they've been in prison a whole 2 years. But you know what? They're reformed, and you know if we're forgiving them, and if the goal of prison is to reform people, then we need to forgive them of this crime. And so, number one, the purpose is reform, but that's got to happen based on how God's word says it's got to happen. But anyhow, we get this concept that if we have forgiven somebody, then they should be alleviated from the social consequences. And so that means that if we're Christians and we're going to forgive people, then there can't be any consequences. There can't be any consequences for lying, cheating, stealing, murder, adultery, any kind of immorality, any kind of sin you want to commit, because we're Christians, we're supposed to forgive you.
So in other words, we get mixed up, because if I'm going to give you mercy, then you should have zero consequences is what, you know what I mean? We get to that extreme.
Right. And so, you know, the purpose of social consequences is, number one, that's the only way a fool will learn. Mm-hmm. So the person that commits these egregious acts, they have a chance to learn. They have a chance to finally come to this place to realize, whoa, wait a minute, there's consequences, you know, for this stuff if you get caught. And it's easier. I'd rather just avoid the consequences and get a job instead of stealing. But also, you know, you got to protect the innocent. If you don't protect the innocent, there is no justice. And then thirdly, you got to teach the fools that are watching, the upcoming foolish people, and they're watching this, and if they see that you get by with evil with little or no consequences, then they go, oh, okay, I'll do that too.
Right.
And then the fourth thing is that the consequences should always provide restitution to the people that are harmed. In other words, if you steal from them, you should have to pay it back. Actually, okay. The Bible says you pay it back double, and there are certain consequences where you have to pay it back six times over. And so, you know, that'll stop you from wanting to steal.
Right.
But all of God's social justice has in it a way to protect society, a way to draw people back to God, get them out of sin. And, but the point is this, is if their particular crime calls for death, then you need to get them connected to God. You need to get them connecting, you know, experiencing God. You need to get them to experience, you know, experience the forgiveness of God. But they still should pay that price.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the biblical way. And the reason the world is a mess is because we rejected God's standards of justice. But anyhow, so Paul is approaching the people, and so he's forgiving, because when we forgive people, this again, this does not mean that we have decided just to let this go. It means that we want you to know that we send away any offense toward us. We're not going to treat you cruelly. We're not going to try to persecute you. We're not going to try to create a penalty for you on some personal level, because that's what God does. You know, God will forgive you if you want forgiveness, if you seek forgiveness. But if you don't seek forgiveness, then you can't experience His forgiveness that He's offering.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all kinds of really civil and social unrest in the church at Corinth because of all this mess that's going on. And so Paul is just saying, I don't want to give Satan an advantage. Now, remember, when you read the word Satan or read the word devil, you need to always remember what those words mean. Slanderer, fault finder. And so he's saying, I'm forgiving, and I want this person to know that I forgive them, because I do not want to put them into a situation where they start slandering, where they start criticizing, where they start condemning, where they start disqualifying, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Well, why do people do that? Why do people who get caught in sin, why do they, you know, blame the people that catch them? That's an interesting phenomenon. You know, on Facebook every now and then, you'll know that somebody did something really, really dishonest.
Yeah.
And you'll know that they got caught. And then they say, you know, if you're a Christian, like you say you are, you shouldn't be judging me. Getting caught isn't being judged.
But there's a big difference because it's actually a heart revealer too. Because
absolutely,
even that whole thing of how we approach people in crisis and after betrayal and stuff. One of our first questions are, did they get caught or did they come forward? Because it just there's not that both can be restored. That's not in question. No. However, it does help us to know how this process is going to go. Mm-hmm. It's a revealer.
So Satan trying to take advantage of the situation. And that doesn't happen because the devil comes around and whispers in people's ears. You know, everybody just needs to get rid of that concept of the devil. You know, the devil. What happens is then the person who committed these crimes or committed these violations or, you know, violated societal norms, this person starts dividing and accusing and criticizing. Now, the purpose of slander, the purpose of accusation, the purpose of all of this stuff is to change the perception of the people that are involved. That's all. In other words, if the three of us have an argument, we have some kind of argument today, and then after it's over, then I call Bob up and I say, Bob, I just want to tell you know, what you're probably not seeing here. In other words, I want to change his perception so that he doesn't take your side. Now, this gets really important.
This is interesting. Yeah.
This is a scheme.
This is a scheme. It is a strategy, actually. And so Paul goes on to say in verse 11, lest Satan should take advantage of us. And remember, not Satan running around whispering in people's ears, but people whispering in people's ears. You know, Satan don't have to come and attack the church. The church is attacking the church. And he says, for we are not ignorant of his devices. Now, that word devices in most translations is going to be strategies, stratagems. And so it does relate to the concept of him having a strategy. But in the original language, it points to the fact that that strategy is to change your perception.
Hmm.
So slander, groupthink, all of this is an attempt to change your perception and to create a false reality, to draw you onto a false side, a false narrative, a false, a corrupt agenda. You know, why do you think that the news media in America never, you know, I don't care if people like Trump, don't like Trump. That don't matter. I didn't like Obama, but I really didn't want to hear, I didn't want to hear people attack him all the time.
No.
You know, of course the news media never did. But why do you think the news media is constantly, constantly, you know, altering audio and video messages of what Trump says, or audio and video messages of what's happening out in the streets, or, you know, why are they always giving the worst possible report, whether it's true or not? One reason, they want to change your perception.
Mm-hmm.
Because once your perception is changed, you fall in that category where Jesus said, look, there's a reason you can't get set free. It's because you insist that you see. You insist that the way you see it, that your perception, your paradigm is the way it really is. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you something. As a believer with a whole lot of experience in counseling and coaching, the person, I'm not saying that a person should immediately say, okay, I'm guilty. That's not what I'm talking about. But the person is not even willing to consider, well, maybe I did do something offensive and didn't realize it. That person that is not willing to consider anything beyond their current perception will never get set free. They will never move beyond that point in their life.
It's true. Like everything to do with humility, being teachable, being flexible, being open-hearted, humility is probably the biggest word, just that maybe I don't know everything. Mm-hmm. Maybe I have more to learn or understand.
But it's a willingness to change perception.
Yeah.
Yep.
Am I willing to, and I use this illustration often, you know, when working with a couple, I said, the thing that I want is I want you to begin to experience your benefit of oneness. Because a lot of times, you know, you're coming at a particular situation from opposite ends. Yep. And you're creating all kinds of conflict, you know, friction, you know, you're opposing one another. You're seeing them as an opponent, you know, one that I'm combating with. And all I'm saying is, would we be willing, you know, to put the gloves down and kind of come together? And would we be able to change? Would you be willing to change your perception?
Yep.
You know, that just possibly, it's not that they have to be all right, mm-mm, but would you be willing to change your perception and then be able to come together and be able to say, hey, you know what? We're better together than, you know, mm-hmm, than we are opposing, you know, one another.
And it doesn't even have to be, you know, it doesn't even have to be initially be that much of a, mm-mm, of a coming together. The only thing we have to just start with, and you said this, I'm just reemphasizing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just maybe.
Just maybe.
There's some parts of this I don't see.
Yep.
Exactly.
You know, Stephen Covey, you know, he wrote the groundbreaking book, you know, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, mm-hmm, back in the 90s, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I tell you, there was something that I was tending to do naturally, but I would condemn myself for it. And I don't know if it was on here or where it was that I was talking about recently. You know, sometimes people would really accuse me of being wishy-washy. Because as a leader, maybe something would happen and there would be something really egregious going on. And you know, my knee-jerk reaction might be, I'm telling you, I'm going to deal with this. I'm dealing with this person over this. Of course, number one, when you say that, people don't know what you mean. They say, oh, I know what it means if I say I'm going to deal with it. I'm going to cuss them out.
They actually make a judgment, a decision. Yeah. Oh, and they have a perception of what dealing with means.
Mm-hmm. So there's always a problem there on defining these words. But you know, when you're upset about something, just emotionally, you're going to say it more forcefully, you know,
yes.
no matter what you mean.
Yeah.
And so, but what I always found, well, particularly as a young leader, when I would sit down with people, my heart would go to a different place. I mean, mm-hmm. I would be ready just to chew them up and spit them out. And I would sit down and I would always end up going to compassion.
Hmm.
Now, that didn't mean that I couldn't be confrontational. It just meant I always came back to Christ in me. How would God handle
yeah.
this kind of thing?
Yeah.
And so I would get accused of being wishy-washy and flip-flopping back and forth. And you know, all I could ever say is, look, I don't, you know, I'm not sure I understand it all, but all I know is this. I tried to handle this in a godly way.
Yes, yes,
well,
yes.
Well, that's not what you said before. That's not what you said you were going to do before. Well, if I said I was going to do something different, then I was wrong.
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
and in that moment, I realized I was wrong. Or maybe you think I said it, and that's really not what I said.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you know, I started a practice of realizing very early on that before I get all, even if I'm all jacked up and think I got it all figured out, I need to hear your side of the story. And, you know, Proverbs tells you that. Proverbs says, you know, the first person that comes and tells their story always sounds right.
Yeah.
And Proverbs says that it's to your shame mm-hmm. to respond before you hear both sides
yeah.
of the story. And then the justice of God's word says that you cannot accuse a person on the word of one witness.
Yeah.
So you got to bring them in. You got to hear their story. And you got to...
Yeah.
See if there's other witnesses that
yeah.
you know that validate one story or the other. So it's amazing
yeah.
with Christianity. And I tell you, I used to get so angry about this. It's like I would see people's lives ruined because pastors would just believe the first person that came to them with the story.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, what? Are you kidding me? So I didn't know that I was working this law, but Covey came out with this thing, and I had never been able to define what I was doing because I struggled with, well, maybe I am being wishy-washy. Maybe I am being
yeah.
on and off.
Yeah.
But Covey said, always seek to understand before seeking to be understood.
Mm.
See, if you start a conversation with, I want you to understand me. I want you to understand my position. I want
wow.
you to understand how I say, then really you're shutting that other person down. You're saying, I don't care what your side is. I don't care what the truth is. I don't care what anything else is. All I want you to know is how I see this, and that's how I'm going to treat you based on how I see it.
That is profound.
But if you want to be wise, you got to understand.
Yeah.
You got to listen to that other person. You got to go through the biblical process of gathering information before you ever create your point of view on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then even when you create your point of view, you can't have judgments.
Right.
You don't know why they did it. There's, you know, unless they know why they did it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, most people are so subjective that They're going to be influenced by the gossip, by the rumors, by the opinions, by the slanderings of other people, and they are going to create a perception.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to understand this. Anytime your perception has been created by gossip and rumors and slander and those sorts of things, I want you to understand, you just volunteered to be deceived by the devil's devices. It's just like you put a message out on Facebook. I'm really thinking about dancing with the devil and messing up my life and being mean and wicked and judgmental and sinful. Could somebody just tell me some gossip about somebody, please?
Oh, I'm in the mood to be deceived. Can anyone just gossip, please?
Yeah. Absolutely. But see, because once that becomes your reality, you start relating to everything involved with it as if your point of view is the reality.
This is really, really, really good. It's so practical. It's hitting hard. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you where we're going to go to in this next week is going to, like, you're talking about putting the axe to the root.
Yeah.
And not in a condemning way. I'm not talking about just beating it up. I'm talking about if you want to get where you are never deceived.
Yeah.
After next week, you're going to know how.
Okay, good. That's a great cliffhanger.
If you want to get to the place to where in every situation you have absolute total confidence in God and what's going to happen, what the outcome is going to be, You're gonna discover that next week.
Wow. I bet everyone's gonna be listening next week. Because you just set us up.
But you have to send a special anointing offering.
Oh, man. Goodness.
I found this quote. It says, I stopped explaining myself when I realized other people only understand to their level of perception.
Where is that?
I don't know. it is true. But yeah. I think a lot of people really do come off, you know, on that defensive side.
Yep.
And we started, you know, today, you know, from that place of truth. You know, truth is that absolute.
Yeah.
But the application is multidimensional. Yep. And so there is a choice that I make in this. And so I, you know, for all of us, recognize that that choice hasn't been taken away.
Yep.
Very good.
And so I think for me, a real eye opener, you know, for today, you know, one of my take homes is, you know, the way I perceive others is actually a greater reflection of me.
And, you know, we kicked this thing off talking about relationships. Mm-hmm. And we talked about relationships in the natural.
Yep.
And we kind of talked about relationship and crises. But you know, remember we said the way you relate to others is the way you're really relating to God. You may pretend like you're not. You may deny it. But the point is this. In every situation God is that's going wrong, God's trying to deliver you. In every situation where you're getting off track, getting deceived, God is trying to lead you.
Yes.
And every bad decision that you are in the process of making, God is trying to reveal the way that you should go. But if in your relationships with other people, you are quick to let a perception get created because of what you hear, what people say to you, then I got news for you. The reason you are staying in a state of lack is because you're really not, you've already created a perception of what you expect or how you think it's going to happen, and you've closed God out. Because once you create a perception about anybody, you either let them in or close them out. But you do the same thing with God. When you create a perception, this is what God's got to do. This is how this is supposed to happen. This is what my preacher said was going to do. I can't even tell you how many people I talk to on an ongoing basis that is like their world is falling apart, but they will not go to the simplest places in the Bible. Like I said, the names of God, you know, the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, the teaching, the teaching and the life and the ministry of Jesus. They will not go to these simple places and just ask a simple question. Is my perception of God different than what these things reveal?
Yes.
And if they're not willing to do that, nobody can help them. God can't even help them.
Yeah. Good. Jim, that was really good.
Really good.
Great. And just in closing, I just do want to remind you of a free copy of Jim's most recent book, God's Wisdom for a Fair and Just World. There is a free download for that as well. There's a new printed version that will be available very, very soon. So
again, it is available right now.
Oh, it is. Okay.
It's the audio may be out by the time we do this. But
gotcha.
If not, okay, it'll be right behind.
So there's many ways, you know. So audio book, hard copy, or a free download.
Want something you to can share with everybody. All right, Jim. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim.
All right, guys.
Love to the family.
It's been so fun.
To all the crew there at Impact Ministries. Love y'all.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Bye.